Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular show is the Clone Wars Report.
Clone Wars, episode 20.
Come for the Clone Wars discussion, stay for the continually more aggressive news reporting noise that Ken makes. There's going to be more drums. Soon it's just going to be explosions and pew-pews. And like, listen to the news. Bang, bang, explosion, fire. Ah!
As an aficionado of watching breaking news clips on YouTube over the last 40 years of life, pop culture life out there. Yeah, I have a lot of choices to choose from.
You really do. I mean, to be fair, the opening narration of the Clone Wars is kind of breaking news.
Right.
Were you watching a holo? Too bad. Ryloth is in trouble.
There we go.
Pay attention right now. Anyway, the humans you've been listening to talk, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is, of course, Ken Knapsack with the great drum noise and insights. This is the 20th episode of our Clone Wars Report show. We are discussing the entire Clone Wars animated series in chronological order, and this episode in particular that we're discussing, I should say we're discussing arcs, and then we're discussing individual episodes if they're kind of self-contained. In this particular episode, that we're discussing does have some threads that continue into our next episode, but this episode is such a specific, so many specific ideas, we want to discuss it by itself. And that episode is Supply Lines. It is season 3, episode 3, but again, we're watching chronologically, yeah. So it is earlier for us. Very brief summary of Supply Lines. This is basically a story of Ryloth, the planet Ryloth, the home of the Twi'leks or Twi'leks, depending on how you personally choose to say it, has been invaded by the Separatists. It is being blockaded by the Trade Federation. The Jedi and the Republic are doing their best to help the freedom fighters of Ryloth, led by Cham Syndulla. It does not go well. Everyone is starving and dying, so there is an effort to get relief supplies. The Jedi reach out to Bail Organa and Jar Jar Binks to go to Toydaria to negotiate. Basically, using Toydaria is just a staging planet to get desperately needed food and supplies to Ryloth for humanitarian purposes. And chaos, violence, and comedy ensue. So, Ken, the moral of this episode is where there's a will, there's a way. What do you make of that moral?
Well, what I make of that moral is, again, multi-leveled. There's a lot later on. We'll talk about what I think the themes are and what's at stake. But I think it's not just about, hey, if you want to get something done, there's a way. But I think if you feel, if you feel deep down, there's something inside you need to connect to. You need to find a way there, too. I look at the king here that we're going to talk a lot about, and I think this moral zeroed in on a lot of his actions in this one. Though this moral, there's so many, it shows up in a lot of moments here in the episode.
Yeah, yeah. Where there's a will, there's a way is kind of a fascinating one, because sometimes the morals definitely feel similar to real life morals. But this one is pretty much just like, that's a thing, parents and mentors say anytime. Like, my manager at Kinko's said that to me about making copies. That's kind of a standard thing to say in life, but when you put it toward Star Wars ideas in this episode, it's really lives that are at stake. Absolutely, people are gonna die, which I did not mean that as a joke, but that is the name of one of the Jedi characters in this episode that we're gonna get to. But I really like what you're saying of this idea that it's not just a motivational poster slogan, right? It's that if something truly means something to you, that you have to make the choice to find a way to do it.
Yeah. 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 That way there could be, to break it even down, but it's like, there is a way. Can you connect with that way? You must find the way in your heart.
You must find the path. Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of like the idea that, a lot of times we all do have something we want. There is a will. Mm-hmm. And I like that there's a way, not necessarily a good way, not a pain-free way, maybe not the way you expect, but there's a way. How do you connect where there's a will, there's a way to do or do not, there is no try? Do you see a relationship between those two bits of Star Wars wisdom?
Yeah, I do. And do or do not, there's no try is one of those, we've all lived with it. It's been on, posters and bosses' offices for decades now, right? But it's also going to be easily misinterpreted. Also, you could have fun. You could really poke a good old fashioned YouTube plot hole in it. Well, what do you mean, Yoda? It isn't trying just good enough. So I love what you bringing it in here to this episode. I just think because it is a spirit to me, do or do not, there is no try is not discouraging those from just trying. It is a spirit. It's a will thing.
Yeah.
You must commit to it. That doesn't necessarily mean success is always going to be the end of it. Yoda, as we know, is very fond of failure being a great teacher. And so the do not is not the end of the journey.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that does. It totally makes sense. And I feel like do or do not, there is no try is to me about you have to believe that you can accomplish something before you start on the journey. If you don't believe that you can do it, then it won't happen. And I think that to me connects to where there's a will. That's where it starts. There has to be a will. It can't be like, where there's a shrugging emoji, there's a way. Like, no, there has to be a will. You have to be committed. You have to believe that you can make it happen,
Yeah. Where there is a will, there is no meh.
Another great piece of wisdom. Let's move on to just our discussion of the overall reaction of the episode. Did you love this episode, Ken? Did you like it? Did you struggle with it? Did you have a fourth option?
The fourth option is what a joy this was. Here's the thing, you know, I promise I'm going to stop saying this every time we talk about this, Joseph, but reviewing this chronologically and just forcing in a good way, in a Star Wars way, but just like sitting down to really pay attention to these episodes. This is one, episode that, and I think I saw it in our Discord chat. By the way, our Patreon Discord community is just having a lot of fun watching along with us and getting ready. And I believe it was Chad Benefield, one of our longtime supporters, who was like, yeah, this is an episode I'd normally skip if I was going. And I would absolutely agree with that in the sense of you look at what's there. It's a one-off episode. So, all right. Now, yes, and you're right. It connects to Ambush, which we're going to talk about next week, or you know, all that stuff, or next time. But it's a one-off episode. Jar Jar Binks. It's got two characters with silly names: Jedi Master I'm Gonna Die, and then Admiral Dow, which is DOA, Dead on Arrival, is also what they did with that. And you might just be like, "All right, cute Clone Wars. I'll move on from you." But sitting down to watch this, this is a Phantom Menace All-Star game. Number one, you got Tordari, Jar Jar being Jar Jar. You got Lat Dad. And more importantly, you got the intricate politics being put up there on display, and the story saying these politics and hows and the whys, and then the confusing, sometimes gray area you might have to function in, are just as important as the pew, pew, pew of war. And that, to me, makes this episode perhaps one of the best examples, and it's definitely one of the best early examples, considering the order of the show. It's one of the best examples of the Clone Wars series doing what it wants to do, addressing the complexity of war, the effects of your decisions, and just being a clear morality tale. This is not an episode you should skip, but I would have. And so that's my view of it now. I just really had a lot of joy experiencing this episode.
Oh, wow. I am in total agreement with you. And I think it's probably because of the way that we are watching and discussing Clone Wars that I would have said, oh, yeah, no, I like that episode. You know, it's got some political stuff. It's got some really jokey stuff. But yeah, I like it. And I absolutely loved it, looking at the frame that we are of continuing to look at what do the Jedi think they're doing in the war? What does the Republic think it's doing in the war? What are they actually accomplishing? What's actually going on behind it? You know, how many different people is it affecting in the galaxy? How do some of these characters that we know in a little bit of a more of a jokey way, almost like Watto and Jar Jar, and how do they actually have great significance in the galaxy? All those kinds of questions really start popping when you in this episode, when you're paying attention to it. And I think it has this specific tension in even in the community of people who are really into the Clone Wars, that it's easy to remember it from, oh yeah, it's that cool Nikto Jedi I'm a gun die who absolutely dies. I had forgotten that they just straight up pronounce it that way, keep saying it, Jedi Master die, that there's no subtlety to it. This is an episode where, like, you can just watch it once and go, oh, yeah, yeah, there's some politics. There's some cool fighting. But the real centerpiece of this episode is the big Jar Jar physical comedy. That's the one where, you know, Jar Jar does some shtick to save the galaxy. And you can just see it for that and not analyze the why of the shtick, not appreciate the comedy of the shtick, and just really undervalue how rich this episode is when it is tied to all these ideas. And again, like you're saying, and like we've been saying this whole time, that the Clone Wars animated series to me is such a representation of Lucas getting to play in all of the different sandboxes that make Star Wars. And you look at an episode like this, we could kind of think of it one way because it's got some big comedy swings, but it's also got action. It's also got politics, and it's also got the horror of war. It's just got a little bit of everything, and laying down a lot of ideas that are going to come to fruition, you know, over long periods of storytelling with the Twi'leks and you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah. And this, as far as Champ Syndulla, like, this would be the first time we see him obviously in the series, but I didn't look at had we seen him in episode one or two, or season one or two before this? I can't remember that.
You know, off the top of my head, I don't remember exactly where the big Ryloth campaign is. I believe that's in an earlier season. So, yeah, for chronological purposes, this is definitely the first time we're seeing him.
Yeah, and that was interesting and important as well. So, yeah. Yeah, it the Jar Jar of it all is, I can't wait to discuss it because, well, time has a way of changing your views of things in a positive way.
Doesn't it just? Which I'm very excited to get to the Jar Jar of it all. But for now, let's talk about big picture themes of this episode. What ideas did you think were really at stake in this episode?
So I'll tie it back to where there is a will, there is a way. And I'm just going to run down here. This is where I think.
I'm going to interject for just a second. That Ryloth arc is in the actual first season. So if you were watching it in the order it was broadcast, you would have been introduced to Cham already.
Yeah, again, which is like I was even watching, you know, looking at the list and just remembering that, yeah, even in season 7, they did this. It's fine. I don't have any negative thought about, hey, air the episodes when you want to, but it is kind of when you stop and think about it.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, just going back to when I first watched it, I loved the Clone Wars, but I also had this, like, it's overwhelming and there's a lot of characters. And part of that, I think, is because, you know, yeah, that's Cham. I know that's Cham. You know, in my head, I was like, why are they telling me that's Cham? I've met him.
Yeah, I mean,
this lost feeling.
At some point, I think it might be interesting for us to try to pay attention to. We're watching this in chronological order to just watch the story as text, right? But then there's the intent of the creators of what made Lucas decide, because Filoni's on record saying, yeah, sometimes George just wanted to do prequel episodes. What made George go, ooh, we've already started to tell the story of the Freedom Fighters and Ryloth, but I want to go back to the beginning with Cham, and we've already told the story of Toydaria picking a side in the war, but I want to go back to the beginning of that. It's interesting to think that, to me, it underlines that a lot of the times where it seems like Lucas wanted to go back and tell more, it was like he wanted to get the sort of bigger picture political motivations clear.
Right.
Because oftentimes the episodes that are out of order, not always, but oftentimes they do have some like, ooh, but I want to make it really clear where this group of people or this planet was, what their sort of philosophy or policy was before they took this other action we saw.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, for like last week, Clone Cadets, like I said, like that actually really worked for me because it just stood out as a prequel. Like, hey, you've spent 2 years with these clones. Let's go back to how they learn, how they train, how they form. And this one worked as well because it is kind of standalone way. But yeah, so it is. Yeah. George and the prequels, man.
Yeah. He liked his prequels.
To be able to put a finer point on his story is interesting. But it's been again, so rewarding just watching it play out in real time, so to speak.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that listeners and patrons on Patreon are going along on this journey with us because it's really been great so far. So sorry for the interjection. Let's get back to the big theme, the ideas of what's at stake in this episode.
Here's what I wrote down. Here's when you talk about what are the big themes. All right. So where there's a will, there's a way. I say this is a will to go against long-held standards or safe stances. That's a part of its stake. A will to preserve what you believe. A will to help. A will to distract using contemporary art. a will to survive, which is something that has to. It's and the cost of maybe ensuring that for others. A will to sacrifice yourself to something bigger is all at stake here. This is about the Republic and their choices. We got Champs and Dula feeling abandoned and probably rightly so. We got the neutrality issue for Tordaria we're going to dive into. And so King Katanuko, how do you Katanuko?
Katanuko? Yeah.
Katanuko. His choice to stay out of it is obviously clearly in focus. But his choice, as we know, his choice to choose a side will come with a price. So that's interesting. There as well. So,
I like that you looked at it that way of applying the actual moral of the episode and saying, you know, where there's a will, clearly a lot of people had a will, but what hard choices did they make to take away?
Right.
Yeah. Right. For me, the thing that really two things really popped in this episode. I think you're totally right, because there's so many different motivations and deeply held beliefs being challenged. But this idea of neutrality versus compassion, because it gets it. That's really the, you know, key conflict of the episode is, can Bail and Jar Jar succeed mm-hmm. on their mission to get Toydaria to agree to just being this this facilitation point for right. the supplies? And I love that we hear in their ruling council that the Toydarians have these laws and rules that are that value all the stuff that generally Star Wars promotes, and that I think generally in our culture we agree are good, and, you know, being compassionate and helping people in need, and you know, being noble is one of the Toydarians says. And like, but, you know, there's some reality within that. And to set up these two specific ideas, which get pushed on again in the Clone Wars animated series, this idea that, well, just stepping out of a war and not fighting sounds good. Mm-hmm. So, hey, let's be neutral. But then they run into this situation where being neutral kind of means they can't be compassionate, because those two things are directly in battle with one another. And I love that that was this central dilemma that everything was hanging on. Of neutrality clearly has its value. But I think there's this larger idea in neutrality versus compassion, in that Star Wars, I think, is ultimately has a pacifist message, and is really always argues for, if there's any other way but fighting, then don't fight. But then it also always has this other side of, but inaction is an action, and if you let people suffer when you could do something, that's not good either. And it's that really, like, when to ignite the blade and when to throw the blade aside question that I think is boiled up in this, you know, political meeting that, yeah. you know, a lot of people for a long time for this era have, like, oh, Phantom Menace starts with the tax dispute. How boring. And like, no, the juiciest thing ever. And it's because of things like this, of that big philosophical question of neutrality and staying out of war obviously has its merits, but at what point does neutrality mean turning your back on people who truly, truly need help, and gets to this big Star Wars theme of action versus inaction? And I think within that neutrality versus compassion thematic, there's also all of the complexity of the Trade Federation lying about mm-hmm. their neutrality is a way to block lots of efforts at compassion.
Yeah, new gun race, an extremist. Great stuff. No, that Bail Organa and Lot Dodd and Jar Jar before the king is a real high stakes, high tension, a bit of storytelling in Star Wars that made me think you bring in like the Phantom Menace thing. Yeah, we were all there. You know, maybe at some point we made a joke or two. I don't know if you did, but I might have made it, Joseph, about Star Wars. We got the policies. You know, that was the way of the fandom. I go to, and I'm a huge Simpsons fan, but they did a parody of Phantom Menace that made fun of this. It's very, and I'm all for poking fun at Star Wars from time to time. I think people know that, but I remember that just kind of being that. Yeah, they totally nailed that movie. It's the Senate debates. Who wants to watch that? I want to watch this scene over and over, because now looking at it, I'm in the king's eyes. I'm in his head and thinking, well, what would I do? What could you do? And I think one of the lessons I'm fascinated with, what do you do when you are faced with this one truth that is about humans in our world or beings in this world, and you can't turn away from it? And it might put you at slight odds with what came before, and not saying those things that came before, those beliefs before, necessarily bad, but what do you do in these moments? And I love it when it's brought to the doorstep, and you have to make some sort of choice. And that's again high stakes storytelling in Star Wars.
Yeah, and I love that it can look really, really simple. Of you're just watching a simple morality tale, and like, of course the Toydarian king is going to do the right thing, and he's going to help the starving people, yada yada yada. But it's so much more complex than that, and in like getting even to that point where like Bail tries to just omit the fact that yeah. this is a part of the war. And I think even from Bail's point of view of, well, yeah, no, this isn't like the Republic decided Ryloth was a strategic a place of strategic importance. So we're trying to claim the planet and we're vying for it.
Yeah.
It's that the separatists came there and we went there to help. So I'm just not going to mention that the war is part of this, but he has a little bit of sheepish when he like casts his eyes down. Like, yeah, no, I, you know, Lot Dad's got me there. I did leave that part out because I knew it would make it more complex for you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, it's politicking and in a good way on Bale's half, which, you know, I love the use of Bale in this moment. We talk about some of the connections to other parts of the Star Wars story, but it's perfect character to go in and deliver this kind of message.
Yeah, I love the elevation of Bale in the Clone Wars in general, and this is a great Bale episode. The other big theme that you touched on that I thought was really a big part of this episode was just this pervasive feeling and idea of this is relatively early in the war, and these are moments where the Republic and the Jedi are really failing. And they are really feeling it. They're feeling their lack of power to help people. Yeah. Did that affect you? Did that grab you?
Yeah, it's that moment of, you know, Master Dai saying, you know, war can turn promises into hopes. And it's, you know, it weighs on him. So he sacrifices his life. I think he knows there's probably a good chance he's going to die. Same with, it was Captain Keeley. I think he probably knows he's going up against something tough, but he's got to do it for these people. And not just because, hey, that's probably the heart of a Jedi, but I think there's a little bit of, man, I'm so sorry the Republic did this to you and I'm part of that machine right now. I really took that. They play it like that, where he's just like, yeah, no, Cham's not wrong. Damn it. All right. What can I do to change that? And I was moved by that.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I think that he's a cool design, cool voice. The I'm gonna die is legitimately, to me, so meta it's funny that you can get distracted by here is a Jedi early in this war. He's not even saying we were wrong, right? Because they went there to protect the people of Ryloth. But that quote of war turns promises into hope is just, for me, it's that we hear Jedi in the prequel era a lot going like having hubris and being pompous and going like, no, we'll take care of this. Don't worry. No, the Sith Lords are no problem for us. Yeah. No, the Jedi will come in and don't worry. It'll be fine. And to hear a Jedi being like, I'm not saying that the decision to enter this war was wrong. I'm just saying the reality is when you're dealing with all of these factors, even with all of our great power, we can't live up to every promise we make. Mm-hmm. And just this sort of sad reality of that, in particularly in the face of a freedom fighter like Cham, of just like, you know, you said you're coming here would make it better and you're not delivering, is really, really powerful.
You know, Ken reaches across to other fandoms, conversation point 7,000. I go to, I think, season 4 Game of Thrones era when Dany is in Marine, which is something, you know, she frees Marine, frees the slaves. She'd do that every time, you know, and twice if she could. But when she's faced with some of the realities of either her dragons killing a kid, first killing sheep, killing a kid, one of the freed slaves coming back and going, I had a better life with that. And her kind of having to let that happen in some way and not completely going back on it, you know, just faced with, I would do this again. But wow, the reality is what we're doing is more complicated than I first thought, but we got to get through it. We got to find a way through it. When there's a will, we'll find a way through it. I really looked at Master Dai, a character I would have, I did write off. Oh, he's a pun. Great. to see it on his shoulders, to see, like you said, Joseph, he would come here and lead a clone army every time to help the Ryloth, people of Ryloth. But now that he's here, this is the reality. That's big Star Wars stuff. Star Wars stuff. Yeah. Cartoon Network, Fridays at 10 p.m.
Exactly. Yeah. And for my ongoing soapbox of justice for the Jedi, he's such a great picture of a good Jedi. He is going there and he truly cares. He truly has compassion. And yeah, he goes into that last battle knowing very well that he is going to live up to his joke name, right? Like, he seems very aware of it. He is not taken by surprise, but this is the kind of selflessness. He's not wrestling with things that we see some other characters, like in Great Alphabet Squadron with Chasten Chaddock, you know, hoping for a death as meaningful and epic and noble as Jyn Erso. He's just like, I am saving those Twi'lek children right now, and in my life is that that's the life I've committed to, is to selflessly give myself up for people who need me. And yeah, I'm trapped in a galactic war. I only have so much power, but right now I can give my life in hopes that those kids live, and I will do it. And yeah, it's the glory of Star Wars that he is a silly pun and this true depiction of what it means to be fully, fully selfless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So moving on from some of those specific themes within the individual episode, what kind of larger ideas that you see in other parts of Star Wars or morality or perspective did you see in this episode?
I go to the big picture, the Republic and their choices. We talk about that, and we talk about how it boils down to Master Dai. But just overall, and this is so fresh into the war, and we talked about Shaak-Ti sending the clone cadets off and giving a big good, go fight the separatists. But what does that really mean? And, I wouldn't expect her to say anything else. To just see the galaxy trying to deal with this war, but we got systems on the outside, the toes you got to step on, Dooku having a say, but the separatists get to play. Like, I don't know about that new guy. That new guy's kind of crazy. I just see that bigger picture of just really the state of the galaxy as this erupts, and to see the Republic start, it's fallen, it's really fallen, sometimes almost at no fault of their own. Palpatine knew he could just like a Jenga stack, he could pull one piece out, and this was going, and it's really, to me, it's going on and it's at stake.
I think that's all great stuff. I had written down the horror of war, and I think you encapsulated a lot of that particularly well. Not just the horror of war, but the horror of this war at this point in the galaxy when it has become this corrupt, and when there has been so many ways to block compassion that have been constructed. Mm-hmm. Like the actual trouble that the Toydarians are in, of like, this is our actual political charter, is to be compassionate, is to do exactly what we're being asked of by Bail and Jar Jar, but we can't because the Trade Federation, big space Amazon, Google, Taco Bell corporation, we need them, and that's it. And we need them so bad that we can all kind of go, they claim to not actually be aligned with the separatists, but we know from the hollow calls from Dooku to Dodd, they are, and that everybody has to look away from that is great. But I think the other kind of horror of war thing that I was concentrating on is there's so much storytelling in the Clone Wars that I think I want to keep tracking of what are the Jedi doing? Are they being proactive or are they being defensive? And that this is introduced to us is Ryloth is under siege. They are trying to help it. It is a true humanitarian crisis that there's families stuck in the actual crossfire, that the crops are burning and everyone is starving, and it's not just Dai, it's the dead on arrival guy who says the entire Outer Rim garrison will be wiped out. So the stakes of it and the scale of it, you can't just watch it and like, hey, it's fun Clone Wars time, and oh, some more ships blew up, it's war, what are you gonna do? But like, that entire garrison was wiped out that was trying to have a positive impact on this entire sector of the Outer Rim, and just the size of that and the stakes of that and how the Jedi would feel. Yeah, no, people are dying, and by us being involved in this war, we are trying to save them. And obviously it doesn't work out, but to see it from that perspective.
There is a little bit of drowning going on because we're in the early stages. We saw it on Christophsis as well. They couldn't even get help, right? They couldn't get support. And that scene, I I'm watching the episode a couple times, in prep, Admiral Dow, DOA, he dies in front of you. He dies in front of them. And I respect calm in the face of chaos. And so you get the Jedi kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's not good. But they're drowning because they're in it. They're generals in this war. And I think they would rush to save everyone and every system at the same time if they could, but they can't. They're spread so thin. That's why every working with the Hutts is valuable. That's why they've got to lean on unsuspecting heroes like Jar Jar. Full mail in from other things, and I do love his introduction. Thank you for asking for my last mission. It went very well. Appreciate that. You know, because they're, you know what I mean. So it's like, yay! Grab your saber. We're gonna go to Geonosis. We're gonna save some friends, and we're gonna take it to the Separatists. Yeah, hoo ha! And now you get here, and whoa, it's overwhelming, and you can't stop this tide of war. You're in it, and you can only hope for the best. And I was kind of affected by the fact that they watched that whole garrison just explode in front of them, and they still can't help. This is the only way. And it's the people. They got to help the people before they help the military that's fighting out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has that extra weight because it is the Twi'lek people, and they go on to have so much storytelling that is about them constantly being trapped in these cycles. And we're constantly presented to the Twi'leks as families, and, you know, with their own culture and their own society, and to see them particularly caught up in this. And like, I was even affected by like the cool move that Amagundai comes up with to blow up the gunship. And there's that really distinctive rock formation that falls. And I was in like, you know, the Twi'leks who live around there, they probably, you know, that's maybe a national monument. Maybe that's a place that they have picnics, that they, you know, just that level of destruction I had empathy for looking at it in this lens.
Totally. It's like, great. You know, I pass the Eagle Rock of Eagle Rock, California often. It's a nice little rock. I would hate to see it explode, but you got to do what you got to do. A will to survive. And yes, that's part of the cost too.
Yeah. Yeah. The last big picture theme that really jumped out to me, and you touched on it as well, is I think it comes across in a lot of Star Wars storytelling, but I'm also fascinated because it is so clearly a perspective of Lucas himself, is the idea of, is the individual or the group more successful? In last episode, we talked a lot about how the clone cadets unlock this ability to be most successful by working as a team, but then also being really respectful of their own individuality within that team. Particularly Heavy does that. But then this next episode right away is everything that's involved in large organizations is just kind of trapped. The Trade Federation and the Separatists and the Republic and the Jedi, and then most significantly the Toydarians and what are the actual philosophies. And the only reason that these Twi'leks ultimately get saved is because the king acts unilaterally. The king acts as an individual. And I think this is a big idea for Lucas, because I think Lucas has great respect for some organizations, but still just like there's this temptation in the storytelling to always be like, yeah, but actually just like a handful of people who can talk to each other can probably do a better job than this big group that's going to get weighed down and corrupted. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
I think it's this wonderful, complicated thing. I think it's played perfectly here in this episode where the king has to make a decision he feels best for his people that his advisors probably is sided with in the end, but then he has to go in a hallway and make another deal, the deal that's probably more right, a deal that costs him his life down the line. Not in this episode, obviously, you know, because it goes to the core of what we're supposed to be. We are supposed to be about compassion. So we can't be that maybe because there's all these other things and there's a trade deal and this and that. And our original intention is then lost. I think that's Lucas with, you know, I don't think George Lucas is anti-union, but I definitely know he believes the Directors Guild and Writers Guild did not serve him well and did not serve their original purpose or their set out purpose. And he was upset by that. And, you know, I think that's going back to his youth, you know, fighting authority in his own way.
Being a rebel. Yeah.
In a rebel. And I think so that's, to me, it does connect to this type of thing where he's not saying there's no part of this episode. And again, I know George didn't write this episode, but there's no part of this episode that's saying the king, man, what a jerk. He made that, he sided with the Trade Federation. He's just the Trade Federation with some, you know, secret tactics, obviously some dark tactics, have boxed them in a corner that maybe they have to make a certain decision, but it's about the heart and the individual, the heart of the individual making decision that's right in the end, that this was probably about, and making a decision that was right for the people of Ryloth.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, it just struck me because I think this episode, the specific actions of the king, like you're saying, making him seem like, yeah, no, these are legitimate problems that he should consider, but ultimately he has to bend the rules, if not break them, in order to accomplish the most good. And I think it is a strong statement that the letter of the law sometimes goes against the spirit of the law. And I would imagine that that's how Lucas felt about that whole Director's Guild thing.
Yeah.
I have a really cool way to credit my director, but and I want to celebrate my director, but you have this dumb letter of the law rule, and I care about the spirit of the law.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We care about both spirits and letters here at Star Wars. Balance. Here at Force Center, talking about Star Wars. We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll get into all of the great details of action and comedy. Oh, the comedy, canon, lore connections, all sorts of great stuff. We will be back in just a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
A
Force Center fans, don't forget Force Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's Force Center on YouTube. Check it out.
And we are back to dive into the details of supply lines. Ken, as we were talking about, this episode of The Clone Wars has a little bit of everything. It's got action, it's got comedy, it's got horror of war, but we're going to talk about the action moments. Did you have a favorite action moment?
I did. I had a couple little ones, and then I had a big one, which could very well be shared with your choices.
I think probably.
In the beginning, in the almost, it's a little bit after the newsreel, it's kind of setting the tone. There's a quick shot of over a clone's shoulders. He's blasting a mounted cannon towards the droids. It's got to be one of my favorite, not just looking action shots in Star Wars, but the sound. I love my sounds, right? My seismic charges, Holdo maneuver, everything. It's not even laser. It is a World War II newsreel footage of a shot. It is from Saving Private Ryan. I watched it like four times just to be like, whoa, I never really saw that. I love these deep themes. I also love some good pew, 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 Joseph, as a lot of us do.
Yeah, and that's some great pew, pew, pew. If it's the same shot that I'm thinking of, it is the clone is inside the heavy weaponry, right? And we can see the scanner on the giant blaster. Yeah. I rewound and watched that twice, too, because what really grabbed me about all that, the newsreel stuff, as you're saying, is spot on. But, you know, that classic Star Wars graphics of the readout on his blaster that he was looking at the screen for that big cannon. And because of that old style graphics, it looks like he's playing that Star Wars Death Star arcade game from the, you know, back in the 80s. And it was like, yeah, and it's so great that these moments in the Clone Wars with the action in particular, where the designs are all coming from that prequel era, but there's then some little bit like that is from 1977, and it's still on screen and melding and telling the whole big story.
Loved it. I mean, it was great. It was great. I love this. A good shot of a Blurg knocking away a droid, like kind of trampling a droid. I do love Blurgs, or as my girlfriend Grace calls them, T-Rex fishies. I do enjoy them. I enjoy that they're back prominently in Star Wars right now. And then the final one, I don't know. This could be said, but Master Dai and Keeley's last stand. I'm telling you, I was getting a little emotional. Like it's so well done. He's a Jedi, man. You're thinking slice through it. And it does until he kind of can't. And then it's when Keeley stands up again and is like, not done. And then he falls. And that's kind of gives Dai just a second pause where he's like, no, bah! And then he's shot in the side. And it's kind of the end of the end, man. It gave me Boromir vibes in Fellowship of the Ring, like arrows just being slung right into your chest. It was a great moment. I loved it.
Yeah, no, I am right there with you. I remembered, of course, that Dai died, but I was like, exactly how does it play out? And I was just blown away about how much I love this action scene. Not only does it have like the really actual cool action moments, you know, there's a cool flip that he does anytime that the Jedi block blaster fire with their lightsaber behind their back. I am just in heaven. And he does that. It's this great ballet of violence. Lots of cool chops. You know, he goes for some legs, which I always like when the Jedi go for droid legs, too. Yeah. But the way it's framed, that there is this mood across the whole episode that is really like, we want you to feel that the situation is dire. The way it gets set up where the Twi'leks are like, but our children are here. Yeah. And how much you know that I'm Gonna Die needs those supplies, and he is making a last stand so children can survive. And he is not a stoic Jedi like many of the other Jedi know. The way he ignites that blade and then holds it up in that great, like, ritual way and yells for the Republic, for the Twi'leks. He is an emotional Jedi, and it that carries through into the action. Like, he is showing the compassion and the sadness for the situation that he's in. And you get that pretty brutal shot of Keeley getting blasted back, so Keeley's helmet falls off.
Yeah.
And you see a Jedi Master Dai take that in and get into the fight with even more emotion. And it doesn't seem like bad emotion. It doesn't seem like out of control. It seems like true compassion, which only makes all of the flipping and slicing feel more like, I am a Jedi. I chose this life. It is a part of my life to care about others, and it is a part of my life to give my life for others, and I am so determined to do that. And again, the contrast between the funny, like, his name is Dai, and he's gonna die, is this just at this great contrast with how emotionally affecting and just cool his action scene is.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is one of the great sacrifices in Star Wars. I'll say it. I was really that moved for it. I think it's because I'm just so connected to the bigger themes right now. In the review, again, going back to Lord of the Rings, but another character, he didn't have this moment, but it was almost as if he was telling Cham and Gobi and the rest of the Ryloth, kind of like Aragorn to Frodo at the end, like, I would have gone with you to the end, to the very fires of Mordor. Like, it's just kind of this, I'm doing this, I'm going to make a stand so you can go on, and I would have been with you, but I know we're probably not, this is not going to work out. Aragorn lives, Dai dies. So I'm telling you, it worked for me. It really, I've plugged into it and I watched it a few times.
Yeah. I think there's also a power to it. Cause like, that could have been Plo Koon and he could have, survived, you know, and the story with, Bail and Jar Jar and the Toydarians in King, Katunik's choices would have all been intact, but there's a great choice to say, we're going to show the sacrifice that the Jedi are making, and we're gonna, you know, up the stakes of the war. And it serves up, if that would have been Plo Koon, that could have been a really cool scene, and you might have, you know, been a little worried for him, but you'd know he'd lived.
Right.
The fact that this action scene got served to us on a platter of death, like, that's what this scene is. We've decided we want to kill a Jedi to show the stakes, and we're gonna, in fact, name him Dai to remind ourselves that his only point is to die. No fall in love with this guy because he's gonna die.
Yeah.
That gives the scene a different flavor, that's what the creators were setting out to do, is show a death.
Show a death. And again, you talked about the cost early in the war, Jedi can go, you know, that's a real simple, straightforward technique, and it works here. And again, just the, I'm sure Jedi knew this might be the cost of going into war, but again, just that drowning feeling, you're in the deep end of the pool now. And this is the kind of stuff that's going to be happening.
Yeah, yeah. And shout out to Robin Atkin Downs, who is the voice of I'm Gonna Die.
Yeah.
Moving on to moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. This was another one where, for action scenes, we have this big scene of I'm Gonna Die. For comedy scenes, we get a big vaudeville bit from Jar Jar. So I'm sure that's on both of our lists. So let's dive into that big one, and then we can talk about any other fun comedy moments.
Absolutely.
Ken, take me on a journey. When you were sitting down to watch this episode, what was your perception of this comedy moment with Jar Jar, your memory of it versus how you experienced it this time?
Memory is, oh, that's right. They do really dive into the Clone Wars, in Clone Wars. They really do dive into some Jar Jar moments. I mean, I'm Jar Jar positive. Let me watch it. But I do remember back then going, yep, see, this it's still the same. And that was whenever this episode first aired. So this time around, knowing that Ahmed Best voiced it, because remember, he didn't voice, like, season one, it's someone else, but this was supposed to be season one. They probably went back and did the VO for it. Number one, that makes me just immediately more just in tune with the scene. But then again, tying it into now the whole story, which at this time they didn't, that didn't know, Chuck Wendig did not write his epilogue back when this came out. But tying it to that Wendig epilogue in Aftermath, Empire's End, Jar Jar the Clown, I'm like, oh yeah, he does have some skills, number one. But just Jar Jar does, unlike Phantom Menace, if one of the critiques that comes up, obviously we've discussed, is Jar Jar a hero or is he an accidental hero? You know, he trips and falls his way into success, and some people don't like that. That's fine. Here, a will to distract, a will to make this moment happen. He's got to do it. So he decides. This isn't rumbling, bumbling, stumbling, Jar Jar. He decides to be in control of this moment, and it works out, and I love it. And there's some great comedy within it.
Yeah, no, I'm totally right there with you. I think that's great to say it's a will to distract, a will to succeed. And he almost plays on the, I know everybody rolls their eyes at me. I know everybody expects me to be just this absolute mess, this walking pratfall, you know, and knowing like, well, yeah, no, that might be what I do here, or I might make a beautiful piece of Gungan art, a concept of art. But man, I think for the actual comedy of it, like, I think probably when I saw it before, it was like, yeah, no, I get it. Jar Jar is going to trip and fall and he's going to go, wah, and things are going to break. And I remember going like, oh, cool. I like that. It's a little bit, it sets up that tension that that's what's going to happen. And then that's not what happens. But what I really appreciated is just Ahmed Best's comedy timing and delivery was out of this world when I actually paid closer attention. For me, one of the things that I like in comedy is I like the a little bit of the Marx Brothers angle, a little bit of the Harpo Marx vibe of Harpo feels like an innocent fool who honks a horn and puts his legs funny places. But there's a little bit of a darkness creeping under there, a little bit of like the sense of an id of just like you are just kind of a feral creature doing what you want and you don't like it when people are mean to you. And Jar Jar, you can maybe find a tiny elements of that in Phantom Menace, but this was like right there, like the when he was taking their plates, that direct contrast between like, oh, do you like that good dish? Do you like the dish? I'll take it. Like there's literally that in his delivery, the contrast from the light, like, oh, you enjoy the chicken, screw you.
Yeah. You know, I actually wrote down the one at the end is, did you enjoy that? Did you like it? As he picks it up.
Is that good? I'll take it.
And I'd be curious to know, I don't know the details. Maybe there's some behind the scenes. There's, you know, I know there's a lot of that stuff out there. StarWars.com did, is still going through some of them. Kristen Baver writes a little write-ups. They're great stuff to go check out. But I just would love to know how much was scripted and how much they were like, Ahmed, just go into here and play. Because watching him now on Jedi Temple Challenge, this wonderful, you know, vibrant, bright kids game show, he has some real funny comedy detail moments that add to the character and tell a story. You know, have you ever wrestled a Rancor? Stuff like that you can just laugh on the surface comes from a real specific style of comedy. There's a lot of in this, a little bit of Fred Willard stuff going on. I'm such a fan of Fred Willard. Rest in peace, Fred. What makes him so funny sometimes is the little details that just tell an entire story. And I'm telling you, as students of comedy like we are, Joseph, Ahmed nailed some of those moments.
Yeah, and even on like a meta level, right, of like playing the I'm going to drop everything, we have that little moment of, wow, you thought I was going to drop everything, didn't you?
Yeah.
And it's got this edge to it. It also just really reminds me of Jerry Lewis, who I know is a lightning rod of a figure, but I am a student and fan of Jerry Lewis in that era of comedy too, where Jerry Lewis very much on purpose played the innocent child that, you know, particularly when he was teamed with Dean Martin, that Dean Martin, when big, perfect, strong man, beautiful singing, can get all the ladies, is mean to this, you know, weirdo that nobody respects, hunching Jerry Lewis. But then that little bit of darkness creeps in. And this really had that, like, that energy to it, and that intersection where physical comedy is about mastery. And there was even that element to me of like, yeah, Jar Jar trips and knocks things over, but also when he chooses to, he's actually quite skilled. It's like, have some respect for the physical comedians out there, felt like a message in Jar Jar's comedy there.
Yeah.
And I love that he ended all with like, and I need, that's Gungan art. I shared it with you for love and understanding.
Yeah, no, just, what is it, conceptual art piece. And I love too, right before all of this, before the dinner, in typical Jar Jar fashion, I love the hi, hello, use the majesty. Just like, of course you would do that, Jar Jar. I love Bail putting his hand on his shoulders like, Jar Jar, no.
Just, yeah, bring it down a notch. The other thing about this scene that I really, really love, and I think sometimes Phantom Menace gets dinged because I think the choice is to make the comedy pretty bold and broad and accessible and fun and silly, right?
Yeah.
But this, not only is it in his delivery, that contrast between innocent child with a little bit of anger who doesn't want to be treated like an innocent child, mm-hmm. but there's all these little supporting beats. Like just at the start of the dinner, when Lot Dodd says formal dinners are so tedious. So you get that contrast of these people like, oh, we're in this weird, awesome floating table, don't want to be here. Oh, the idiot that no one knows why they're in the Senate is going to do a bit. Great. And you get all that contrast. And like there's that in that alarm when he's taking their food. And then that one moment where the other Nimodian, the other Trade Federation person is super into it. Like, damn, yes. That was great. And they do the little slow burn of like, don't encourage him.
Well, I wrote that moment down too, but also you just touched on it too. If you watch the scene, the Tardarians are into it.
Right.
The guards are good. There's a shake in the head moment when the food's falling down, whatever. But there's a couple of them are just like, huh? And I just love that. Number one, they're giving him, you know, finally the Jar's getting some respect maybe for what he's doing. But I just like that plays. It just plays well to scene. And it sets up that very moment with the other Nimodian into it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think even big picture, you know, and of comedy contrast is there are moments where Jar Jar's comedy in Phantom Menace in is very meaningful. But sometimes it's just fun. Right. And this has the contrast of I have to be a dumbass really, really well. So the children of Twi'lek of Ryloth don't die. Right. It just the fact that he's doing this for a reason. It's not just that an EOP happened to fart in his face.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, can you imagine the Phantom Menace if like the EOP has to fart in your face or people will die, you know?
Yep. Yep. Nope. Powerful. Big stakes.
Yeah. Big stakes comedy. What other beats spoke to you?
There was one I wrote down that when they do walk in, when they first face the king, it's not even made for jokes. It's not even really played as a joke. But when the king says something, he goes, oh, you must have missed this part in Senate orientation. And I just laughed at the little detail of that. And just the idea of young Bail goes to Washington, young Bail goes to Coruscant, just sitting there learning Senate rules and procedures. And oh, here's the Tordarians, neutral, everyone, mark it down, neutral. And the king's joking with the playing into that, just like, oh, you must have missed that. I don't know. I thought it was real funny.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a sick burn. It was pretty nasty. Of like, yeah, come on. Everybody knows this. This is a basic galactic fact.
Yeah.
Come on. The only other comedy beat that really jumped out to me, and it's not even, I don't think intended as comedy, it's just amused me, is I love all of the different, like, sounds of flapping wings everywhere, all these Tordarians everywhere. But when the Tordarians realize that Bail has kept it from them, that there is an actual, you know, a Republic separatist conflict going on in Ryloth, that when they get alarmed, they pop out of their chairs and float.
Love that. Yeah, yeah. I love the floating table is bizarre in its own way. It's its own kind of whimsy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, it's great. And everything going along with a lot in Phantom Menace, a lot of stuff has this very circular flowing design in that weird little city palace that they're in there is pretty great. But I love Toydarian's angry float. It looks like they had all been goosed by the facts and they popped up into the air. Speaking of Toydarians, let's move on to Star Wars canon lore connections to other stories. What kind of stuff there? There's a lot in this episode, but what really grabbed you?
I wondered, and I started to write it down, and I was like, I mean, I kind of already know the answer here, but let's just, you know, let's not forget Watto was a slave owner. Let's not forget that.
Not a great guy,
but he also, there's a streak of, you know, they, I don't know, not again, they're Anakin Shmi did not have a great life, but there was just a little bit of niceness at times from Watto. Again, bad guy. Don't get me wrong. So I was like, in my head, I was watching this episode. I was like, is Watto kind of at war with himself because he is a Toadarian who knows that compassion is supposed to be important?
And yeah.
Bringing. Did he just have a run away from school on Toadaria? Just like, stupid compassion. But now in his head, he's like, oh, God, Shmi does do a lot of good work. God bless it. Like, I notice it's not there, but I just looking beyond just simply like, hey, oh, Toadarians, that's cool. I had that thought.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Knowing that he comes from a place of like, no, our planetary rules of our government are compassion. What are you doing, Watto, with your chance cubes?
Yeah. Yeah. Honesty and everything. Just, it might have showed me how far Watto fell.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that by itself is an interesting canon and lore connection that comes up a lot in the Clone Wars is there is a temptation that I think I have certainly done of making broad generalizations about entire species
right.
Yeah. Based on the one Star Wars character. Like, oh, Greedo,
yeah,
those Rodians, they're all pieces of crap, right? Yeah. Like, no. Yeah. And I think that has to be purposeful at this point to be like, oh, and even like, ooh, Twi'leks, those are the dancing women. Like, no, like there's so much in this era where George is taking, you see them as, you know, having Senate roles and all that in the actual movies. But the Clone Wars animated series where you can dive in to like, we're going to spend time on Rodia and we're going to spend time on Toydaria. And most of Trandoshan culture behaves poorly. Yeah, we get that. That's their culture. But let's stop making generalizations every time we introduce a bounty hunter, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. Especially with the Twi'leks, the Twi'leks, as they say. But they've said Twi'leks in other parts of Star Wars, so it's sometimes confusing. Yeah, no, we grew up with Ula. And then you go back in Phantom Menace, you see them again. And then there's two beautiful Twi'leks attending to Sebulba. So that led you down that path maybe in the fan. Oh, I got it. And I love that you get to see more, and I love that Cham Syndulla emerges. I love that Hera is against that type. I love that which one of the books goes into kind of the dark side of Twi'lek dancers in the clubs and
I believe it's Lords of the Sith.
It is Lords of the Sith, right?
Yeah, Lords of the Sith has some explicitly dark stuff for Star Wars.
Yeah, it's early on in the canon, folks. If you haven't read it, give it a shot. So to see that, you know, again, it's a Phantom Menace All-Star game, but to like, cool, all you thought was Watto, we're going to go into that. We're going to go into a bigger where he came from and where he, again, maybe fell from and this great culture. And yeah, you're right. George loves that kind of stuff, being able to go into it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And for the Twi'leks, obviously they will go on, but it's great to see Gobi, who will appear in Lords of the Sith and go on to feature prominently in Rebels. And just I love how much the Twi'lek story, and then obviously going all the way forward into Resistance Reborn, is a big part of the canon of Star Wars across all of it.
Very much so.
What other connections spoke to you?
I love Lot Dodd and him getting the victim of his own medicine, so to speak, taking his own medicine. The long process of the Senate making decisions now works against them, and just him at the end, like, I can't, you know, things get bogged down in the Senate, Organa, you know, like, oh yeah, like Naboo and your invasion of Naboo. Yeah, absolutely.
Like the reason you even still have a Senate seat when very clearly you are dealing with the separatists behind our backs. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. He was close to whipping off that hat and stomping on it angry.
Oh yeah. He did it with the fist. Curses. I love the, again, we talked about it, but Bail Organa is a humanitarian, and him literally delivering supplies is a connective thread to Leia. Leia, Princess of Alderaan, Rebels, when she's delivering those ships. Like, I love that little kind of connective thread there.
Yeah, that's absolutely great. I think for me, the Trade Federation stuff in general of clarifying this really complicated relationship that the Trade Federation is still super important, and planets like Toydaria can't just be like, no, thank you. Like, they're kind of vital, and to go against them creates a bunch of problems. And that they're trying to claim Newt Gunray is an extremist, you know, all while still having this Senate seat. And this idea of the Trade Federation is kind of Too Big to Fail is this great picture of corruption that touches all these other parts of Star Wars in a really interesting way. I like the Blurg's presence, but I particularly like that circling shot with Cham.
Yeah.
When he's questioning the Jedi, like what a great visual to have, like sort of moral superiority of like, I'm literally above you and circling you while telling you your decisions were bad.
Yeah, no, that was great. I love Orn Frita. Just being Orn. Even saying nice things. He's Orn Frita.
He is Orn Frita. Yeah. And there's a lot going on there with old Orn. Corn Fritters, right? That's where his name came from. That's how Lucas's daughter said Corn Fritters. My final thing for canon and lore connections that I wanted to underline here, because it comes up again in lots of Jar Jar's early episodes, is there is this, I think it's a little bit meta to the fan reaction to Jar Jar, but it's also making this a part of the internal story of the galaxy, that every time Jar Jar comes up, characters have this little half-beat pause of everyone knows Jar Jar is an issue. Mm. Like the way they say it's Representative Binks. Oh, yeah. And there's an episode coming up where almost every major player in the episode is like, oh, Jar Jar. Yeah. Ah, damn it. Like there's this like he is a representative of Naboo. We do have to respect him. Does he need to do that?
Right. Yeah. Especially from Obi-Wan. So well. Good job.
Yeah. Obi-Wan knows him well. Mm-hmm. All right, moving along. Was there anything that you disliked or questioned about this episode?
I mean, you know, there would have been a time we would have focused entirely on Jar Jar in perhaps a negative way. And look, again, I get it. I get on the surface Jar Jar the clown. I mean, this is the theme, and it's easy to maybe overlook and write off, and not all of it works for everybody. I'm not going to say that it is. I just was particularly moved by it this time around. I have to remove that from the list. I don't know. I still have a complicated relationship with some of the name choices. They're fun. I don't take them too seriously. Jedi Master Dai, General Dao, dead on arrival. Pre Vizsla is like, come on. General Losim. We talk about General Losim. I think Losim's a pretty interesting character. But it's hard sometimes to look at that name and just be like, you know, take him seriously on a level. So I don't have a problem. I don't dislike. I don't even question it. But it just does keep coming up. And part of this rewatch, part of this, I would remember this episode if I was looking at the description, like, oh yeah, that's the I'm gonna die. Well, that's silly. So it does. I'm not saying it does a disservice. I'm just saying it's there, and that's something that I don't know if I 100% like, but I can also have fun with.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to highlight, because it really is this very Star Wars, particularly with Lucas, of like, well, these are deep, complex philosophical thoughts, you know, intriguing political questions, and you know, it's also still a Flash Gordon B movie, because he's going to die. So he's named Die.
And you just said Orn Frita, where it comes from, and But hell, Chewbacca is George's dog, you know, like,
yeah,
it's all there. So that's why I'm not saying I'm just saying from personal experience, look, in the past, it would have been like, oh, yeah. Oh, God. But, you know, it is what it is.
And just a reminder with Nemodians that there's not, you know, a ton of subtlety going on with those names either, given the, you know, closeness between Newt Gunray and Newt Gingrich in the time at which The Phantom Menace was written. And, you know, Lott and Dodd were both the last names of politicians. It's, that tradition continues into the new Nemodian that was introduced in the most recent Padme book in Queen Sparrow. Mm. If anybody wants to go look at what modern politician that Nemodian's name looks like, there's a fun Easter egg there, depending on your definition of fun. So, yeah, the naming conventions are a fascinating place where Star Wars meets the real world, sometimes in fun, silly, goofy ways, and sometimes in opinionated ways. Was there anything for me that I disliked? Your question was actually hard. I think question, not disliked, but it's something that I think a kind of fan thing that I like to kind of headcanon and nerd out about, that comes up a lot in the Clone Wars, is the extent of a Jedi's power, right? Because I'm gonna die it's shot well when all those ships come in and he realizes how much of a force he's up against. But I always have fun thinking about, like, well, couldn't you use the force? Couldn't have you pulled a rock down? And like, but the way that I like to think about it is that using the force does take a lot of concentration. And if you are being fired upon constantly, you have to put pretty much all of your concentration towards blocking those blasters. And they come at him from all sides. So I kind of think about it that way. The other thing I like to think about with some of the Jedi in Clone Wars who we see go down is, you know, a lot of the characters that we spend time with, a lot of time with the major characters, we are reminded again and again that they are the best of the best. So yeah. Sometimes you got to see the I'm going to die. You got to see the Coleman Trebors who are not as amazing as Mace or Yoda or Obi-Wan or Anakin or Luke or Rey, you know?
Mm-hmm. Excellent point. Excellent point. I think that's powerful. Well, because but I had to, you know, I'm probably every time we review these episodes, particularly if it's one in the arc, I'm going to watch the episodes at least twice. This one I watched like 2.5 times, skipped through some highlights. I had definitely on the second time, I had to do a let me focus because I had exactly what you think. I was like, man, I've seen Jedi just slice through 2,000 droids like nothing, like they're putting butter in toast. How come he couldn't do that? Then I watch again. I was like, oh, no. You know, he sliced through a bunch. But exactly what you're, that Keeley moment and the death of Keeley or the moment he shot. Like, yeah, you're 100% right. The only frame of reference I have for what it might be inside that your mind when you're using the Force is Zahn writing the Vader stuff of kind of sensing it and even kind of maybe saying it out loud to himself, at least in his head, of shot to the left, move to the right. You know, that's the only kind of frame of reference I have.
Yeah.
I didn't play Vader Immortal. Maybe in the VR, you get a full experience. You know what I mean? Because otherwise, it's pressing X or circle on a controller. And that's how I know how to use the Force. So I think, to highlight the concentration and that Jedi can die and that there's some superstars. And that's the way it is.
Yeah. Because even going back to Empire Strikes Back, when Yoda's like, no different lifting the ship, only different in your mind. And then Yoda, you know, concentrates and takes a minute. He doesn't just like, you know, flick one little clawed finger and then walk away and the X-Wing just flips up. No problem. He concentrates, right?
Yeah. And it takes a toll.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Moving along then. Anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
Little tiny thing. I think we've covered a lot in this episode. I'll say this, Cam, the complicated hero. I love just, he's not quite, I'd say Saw Gerrera, but I just watched the Rebels episode last week where he shows back up again in Hera and him and their complicated relationship. And it's very real. And his heart's in the right place. His end goals, I think, are always in the right place, like Saw from a certain point of view. He's not done maybe some of the things that Saw's done, but you know, so I love the frame here where he is a hero, he is a leader. It's complicated, and he has a right to be upset and right to feel abandoned, but is always going to do the right thing. And I Cham Syndulla content, like even a book or something. I don't think they'd do that, but like I'd be interested in the life of this leader. It's interesting stuff.
I agree. Since they're doing that Clone Wars anthology with the different perspectives, I'm really intrigued and happy that they're doing perspective things. It would be great to go to have the Cham book, and you know, parts of it would be things like this, but you could go through from his perspective. Would be awesome.
I think it works. It's one of the things that worked most effectively for me with the Aphra audio drama. Just like, all right, I'm familiar with these moments, but now she gets her spotlight and she gets to have her emotions, thoughts, doubts, and everything on display. And that worked really well for me. And from that point of view, so he's an interesting character that just kind of is out there in Star Wars canon, and either you know him or you don't. And again, Lords of the Sith factored in greatly too. So I'd love more content from him. Final thing, this is so tiny. You talked about the design. I really love the design of the floating platform that Bail and Jar Jar and eventually Lot Dodd and his aide are on. I think it's so Clone Wars, prequel era Star Wars. It floats up and this little like bar comes up and you can lean on it, dug it. And I just, and in keeping with Tordaria where they're floating and flapping around, you know, dining room table, everything kind of floats up. I really like that look, the aesthetic and the feel. I thought it was a neat little sci-fi Star Wars design.
No, I think that's such a great point that their architecture is built around for themselves floating. And then when off-worlders that they don't really want to entertain come here, like, all right, we'll have, you know, a pod for you because you're not floaters. Like, but floating is a natural way of being for a Toydarian. That's so great. Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of things I liked, but I wanted to touch on the design for Keeley's armor. Mm. Is that it looked like kind of tentacles. Look, that was so cool. And then this other detail was there's this printed art pattern on Amagun Dai's Jedi robes, which is just really cool and gives him just like a different flair. And I like anything that makes a Jedi stand out and be unique. And I thought the design for both of those, the looks of these two characters was awesome.
That's I liked it a lot too. Oh, yeah. Keeley's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could have a figure of any character from this episode, who would you want?
I want our king here, King Katanunko. I'd love a good Black Series floating figure. Yeah, he shows up a lot. He's got, you know, he's in a lot of little things. He was even, I was doing a little research. He was in the comic or those little short, little prelude to the Clone Wars series that came out before the series hit. He was in that. So he's got, I wouldn't mind something in my hand about him. I think he's an interesting character. But the real answer, Joseph, and I hope you don't have this too, but I want the Bail and Jar Jar 2-pack, which includes calming hand on shoulder action.
I love that you could just like flip a switch on Bail's back and he would put his hand on Jar Jar's shoulder. It's okay, dude. It's okay. Yeah, no, I had the Dai and Keeley 2-pack because those are just some cool characters, great look. And, you know, if they had to die so soon, I would at least like to commemorate them in plastic in my home.
Oh, yeah.
As we always do, we are going to wrap up with the moral, not the moral of the episode of the show, but the moral of this episode of our podcast. Ken, what should our moral be?
Our moral will be Force Center shall not be neutral towards Jar Jar.
That is absolutely beautiful. Next episode, one of my very favorites. I can't wait to dig in. It is Ambush Season 1, Episode 1. So join us for that. Until next time, for myself, for Ken, and for Jar Jar, let's be compassionate.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at Aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.